Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Box Office Battles. We are in season two. Greg and Eric here with another fantabulous episode, guaranteed to stir the cockles of your hearts toward finding your own guilty pleasure movies and having them fight each other in a ring until one is declared the winner.
The real treasure are the guilty pleasure movies that we made along the way.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, you know what? You know, eight movies enter, one movie leaves. That's what a guilty pleasure is all about. So,
like the Kumatai or whatever that was called. The fucking Bloodsport.
Oh, that's good.
Man, I remember. Do you remember when that movie came out? I don't remember when it came out because I was probably too young or not like allowed to watch it because my parents wouldn't let it. But at the time, wasn't it like, this is a real thing? Like, I mean, obviously this movie isn't a documentary, but like, this is based on a true story. There's definitely underground fighting where like you enter, but only one person survives. They'll, you know, break your neck or whatever. I remember people like thinking it was real.
Well, I think like this, that whole like mythos started with like the Deer Hunter where they had the Russian roulette in freaking Thailand or whatever, or Laos. Where Christopher Walken, if you've ever seen that movie, does the Russian roulette thing. And then you had all of these movies. It kind of originated with like these Vietnam movies, like in Rambo, one of the Rambos. I can't remember if it's two or three. He's in like
Second Blood.
Yeah. He's in like a tournament, you know, at the beginning and all that good stuff. And yeah, the Bloodsport, when it came out, I went and seen this in the theaters. This was my high school years. And we were fascinated, man. High school boys. And what a movie like this, where it's just a martial arts tournament, probably Van Damme's best because it's so simplistic. There's not a lot of plot. You don't really need a lot of plot. It's just a fight movie.
You need fighting.
Yep.
And you need him doing the splits on some chairs.
And isn't that the one where he does the little dance thing? I don't remember if it's that one or another one, but I think he does a little dance thing. We may have to cover best fighting tournament movies at one point in
Just isn't there a Bruce Lee movie that has like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Yep, Game of Death.
Okay, we could do that.
Enter the Dragon was a tournament movie. Mortal Kombat.
The Kid Beverly Hills Ninja.
Was that a tournament movie though?
I don't know. Did they have to be a tournament? I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're talking about the Kumite. There is a lot of martial arts like tournament movies that are really cool.
Chuck Norris has to be in one of these. It would be a real macro, like multi-level thing because we do a tournament of movies about movies that are about a tournament. Right. It's a real fucking thinker, Greg.
It's very meta.
Yeah.
But that is not what we're doing tonight. Tonight we are in the final of the battles of the first round of the guilty pleasures. Eric and I's guilty pleasures. And tonight we've got the last two. It's on my side of the bracket. We've got Deep Blue Sea, the shark movie where they're bigger, smarter, faster, meaner, going up against Elvis Presley in his race car classic from 1966 in Spin Out. So,
boy, the word classic is doing some heavy lifting in this description of yours.
It all depends. Classic is a frame of mind. A classic can be something that
could
just
be anything
old.
You want. Yeah,
that's right. It could be just something that's old. So, you know, for me, it's a classic. So let's take a look before we get into the movies. Let's take a look at the bracket as it is right now, because these are the last two. So we've got on the Eric side of the bracket, on the left-hand side, we've got Moulin Rouge advanced to the final four over Dude, Where's My Car? We had Legally Blonde advanced to the final four over Devil Wears Prada. So they are making a sequel. How appropriate is that we covered this and part two is coming out?
Yeah, I saw that.
Soon. And then on my side of the bracket, we had Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, the Lonely Island fake biopic against Roller Boogie, and Pop Star won that. And then tonight, like I said, we have Deep Blue Sea versus Elvis and Spin Out, and that will give us our final four. Speaking of the Lonely Island, so we talked about this a little bit last episode where the Akiva Schaffer is directing the new Lonely Gun movie, and it did pretty well as far as like reviews. People are saying it's really, really funny. I have not seen it yet.
Naked Gun.
What'd I say?
Lonely Gun.
Well, that's what I call my member on a Friday night.
Sure. old lady went to bed and the lonely member. I haven't seen it either.
The naked what lonely the, member.
What are the odds that I do see it? About zero.
Yeah. What about when it comes to streaming?
When it comes to streaming and we're required to watch it for the show, I absolutely will. If we do a category that's like where we do top secret and I don't know, Naked Gun and Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Juice in the Hood, like one of those parody.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg, do you like parodies?
No, as a matter of fact, I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, I just thought I'd ask.
I already pulled that on my wife the other day when we were talking about The Lonely Naked Gun.
So, and you said parodies?
Yeah. So you see what I did there? I mixed Lonely Island with Naked Gun and came up with Lonely Island Gun or Lonely Island
Naked. Or the Naked Island.
Naked Island, yes. So that's what I did.
I have seen that video.
The Naked Island.
On the internet.
Yeah. I think everybody's trying to figure out who went to the Naked Island.
Yeah,
but the list has not been released yet, so we have no clue.
Release the list. That's the only time I'm going to say it.
What list?
Mm-hmm.
The 11 herbs and spices. That's what we need the DOJ to put out there. For crying out loud, it's expensive to eat out. I need to make my KFC at home.
Man, I swear they stopped using that recipe like
you think so?
10 years ago. Yeah, big time, because that doesn't taste the same. Like, when I was growing up, you would get a big bucket of KFC and it tasted like chicken and like awesome. And now it's just a big pile of fucking slop. Like if they found a dead body in a swimming pool and fished it out and then marinated the chicken in the water that was left over, that's what it tastes like now.
Do you think that maybe our taste buds change as we get older and it's like more magical to us? I mean, when I ate KFC when I was a kid, I'm not going to lie, I was like Cartman in South Park. I would get to the skin before anybody else did and scarf that crap down. Especially if it was a breast. Nobody wanted to eat the freaking breast except for the skin. Then you just chuck that breast right back in the bucket.
I think no. And here's why.
You just really think it's shit now.
Because when I went to London with Jarrett Reddick of the band Bowling for Soup to do this country music thing that we were doing, TM Dave, the tour manager for Bowling for Soup,
right,
told me that you got to try KFC while you're in England because the food safety standards or whatever it is are totally different. And it's so much better here than it is in the United States. And so I just get the sense that they'll just get away with serving you slop.
Did you try it in the UK?
No.
Oh, you should have. I lived there for a while. And yeah, it things over there, like the fast food, it does taste different because they don't like import things from the US. They just recreate the recipe over there. But it was still really good. I mean, a lot of the stuff we had over there. Nando's is probably the best thing I had in the UK.
I've heard of this place. I was too busy living the life of a country rock and roll star.
Nice. But yeah, you know what you can get in England that you can't get in the US is the McDonald's fried apple pie.
Oh, yeah. We used to have those.
Yeah.
We don't anymore, though.
They got rid of them because of healthy
COVID.
Nuts. Well, I wish it was just COVID. They got rid of those years ago, man.
It was everything.
But those, you mean, seriously, deep fried pastry, boiling hot. I think it was probably because somebody bit into it and they burnt their mouth. And then they said, you know what? We're just going to dial down the fried apple pie. We're no longer going to throw these into hot grease. We're just going to bake them from now on.
Yeah, we've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas. So let's just shit can the whole thing. Right. Which is kind of like the way everything is
these days. Pretty much. And I mean, seriously, I miss fried apple pies. And every time I go to the UK, I go to McDonald's and get one. So anyway.
All right. Well, which of these two movies, one of them way dumber than the other, are we going to talk about first?
Well, let's be honest. They're my picks. They're my guilty pleasures. And they're both dumb. But dumb in different ways.
Yeah.
Dumb in different ways. And I love them both. So let's preface that I love them both. They're very near and dear to my heart. So be gentle with your
I'm not here to take a dump on movies that you like. We did that intentionally with the worst movies ever. And that was our chance to just come in here and really pile onto these things.
And we're going to do that again this year.
But that's not what we're here for tonight.
Right.
So we're starting with this one, huh?
Yes, we are starting with Spin-Out.
Baby, we're spinning out.
Here we are. So, I mean, this movie was Elvis kind of in the middle of his film career, where he had kind of started off. I'm a big Elvis fan. We talked about this last episode. I wasn't when I was younger, but when I left home, my mom was a huge Elvis fan, and it kind of stuck with me. So I did like watching the movies when I was a kid. They're good kid movies kind of things. They're like Disney type movies. But initially, when he did Love Me Tender, Jailhouse Rock, King Creole, those were like semi-serious films. They're really kind of gritty. I love King Creole. It's probably my favorite Elvis movie, but it's not a guilty pleasure because King Creole is actually considered good. Spin Out is not considered great. Anything that came after, let's say, G.I. Blues and Blue Hawaii is trashed on as far as Elvis's movie.
Laissez-le bon ton roulé, King Creole.
All right, before we go, you have to see the movie. Don't make fun of Elvis doing a Creole accent. It's really good. It does take place in Louisiana.
Hey, baby, me oh my crawfish pie on the bio.
Good Lord. This is going to be excruciating. I can tell this right now.
No, baby.
But yeah, in this one, Elvis plays Mike McCoy, who is a band leader, like some of the other films he does.
Slash
race car driver.
I mean, living the life.
He's basically, what he's trying to do is fund his race car hobby with his band, or vice versa. They seem to both be equally important to Mike.
He has a passion for racing, but a talent for music. And the two intersect in this hilarious romp from 1966. I mean, okay.
Yep.
This is guilty pleasures.
Yes.
Could you explain to me and to the audience,
okay,
what you found pleasurable about this movie?
I mean, so it's hard to name one thing. I'll say right off the bat. So let me just point out here. I got some props. I do have the Spin Out soundtrack on vinyl. And it has some amazing songs in it, like Beach Shack, Stop, Look, and Listen, All That I Am, I'll Be Back, which is a great song. Never Say Yes. And so I actually really like this album. Also wanted to point out, before we go too deep, my buddy got me this we had Roller Boogie on earlier. This is the actual vinyl that my friend got me.
You haven't opened it yet.
I did open it. I just opened it on the side so that it would still have the cellophane.
Fancy.
Yeah, so this is how much these guilty pleasures mean to me. I actually have the records, dude. Now, if they had a Deep Blue Sea record, I'd probably get that too, but it'd probably just be the Jaws theme over and over.
I looked this up. There legit is two soundtracks to Deep Blue Sea.
There is, actually. Yeah.
And then LL Cool J music.
The LL Cool J song. You know, I didn't think about that. I need to get that now. See? Now I have another record I have to buy on vinyl. But I doubt it's on vinyl. But so the thing is I love the opening. I think that the songs for me, like in the mid-60s, are just peppy enough without being intrusive. They're fun, kind of crazy, kooky songs, just ridiculous songs. The plot is simplistic but fun. It's the idea of the fact that this girl is in love with Elvis. She runs him off the road. And then later she turns out to be the daughter of a rich racing team owner that, well, you know, wants to hire Mike Elvis to not only drive his car, but to sing a song for his daughter's birthday, because that's what she wants, and what baby wants, baby gets. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, you have his drummer who has got Google eyes for Elvis. And then you've got the mysterious, like, woman in the woods that just keeps popping up at every turn and looking, you know, trying to see where Elvis is and with the binoculars. And it turns out
10 minutes into this, I would have been getting a restraining order. What was she writing a book about? The perfect American male or something?
The mating habits. The mating habits of the American male. Yes.
And she wanted to find out all about the habits.
Yes.
And I don't know.
She plays this sexy author that has been exploring men's sexuality. And what cracks me up, so this is the thing, is it depends on the attitude that you take going into it. This is all, like, say, very tongue-in-cheek. So she comes out and she explains that she has this book. And everybody has seen, all the guys have read this book, apparently, except for Mike. Like, the racing owner has read it. All the guys in his band have read it. Everybody knows who she is, except for Elvis. And I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, baby, we've been reading these books for a while.
Well, he hasn't. He didn't know.
He didn't read.
No,
he's not a reader. He's too busy doing two things.
Yeah.
Racing cars.
Yes.
And being in a band.
He's busy.
He's transporting his car around with another car. It's a whole...
Well, he has a racing car. You don't drive around in your racing car. You
can't put miles on that thing.
No, those cars... And let's before we get too deep into it, those cars in the movie are amazing. The main car, the Fox 5.
Yeah.
So the guy owns this car called the Fox 5. He knows that Elvis is the best driver for it. He wants him to drive in the race, so he's guaranteed to win. And it's actually a McLaren that they use in that. That was actually a road racer. And it's a very cool car, but it's called the Fox 5. But of course, Elvis doesn't want to exploit himself just to sing a birthday song to a little rich girl.
He's an artist.
Well, plus the fact that they've got bookings all up and down the coast they got to get to.
Got to be in Palm Springs or Santa Barbara or wherever.
And he doesn't know it yet, but the little bitch wrecked his car.
Yes.
So she put him in the lake by driving erratically.
I one time tried to show my affection towards a woman by driving her right off the road into a lake. Yep. And
didn't work.
Did not work. So we're 50-50 here. It didn't really seem to register on this. It was just kind of like, well, no problem. And
it was worth a shot, I think.
I think it really lays the foundation for the rest of this dumb movie where, sorry, I said I wasn't going to do that, Greg.
I'm not disagreeing with you that it's dumb. I just find it entertaining and fun for me. And I've seen this since I was young, but I've watched this 100 times. And I, out of all of Elvis's movies post Blue Hawaii, when they just started cranking these things out, this one to me, if you didn't like this one, you will not like most of the others. Trust me, they are all the same. But this one moves at a quicker pace, and the plot is just simplistic enough to where you can just enjoy the bridge between the songs, and you get a few, you know, corny jokes along the way, and you get some sweet moments.
I'm wondering, if you didn't know who Elvis was, if you didn't know that he was the phenomenon that he was, mm-hmm. from That's All Right Mama and Blue Suede Shoes into Vegas Elvis into Hawaii Elvis, right. You know, all of that. If you don't know anything about him and you played somebody the album that you just held up, which is the songs that are in this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it's because I've got the benefit of knowing all of the really good Elvis songs, Suspicious Minds, and, you know, like the ones that I really like.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was just watching the movie like, okay, well, I certainly have an appetite for musicals. I can appreciate a movie that's structured that way. But these songs to me don't land like at all. And in pre-show, you and I were talking about one of the songs is called Smorgasbord.
Well, he doesn't sing it like that. He says smorgasbord is all he says.
Smorgasbord.
And it's because he's got loads and loads of women to choose from.
Right.
It's not a literal smorgasbord.
No, yeah. I appreciate you condescendingly telling me that.
I'm just clarifying. He's not singing about food.
No, yeah, I know, because he's making his way around this party.
Right.
But this is right after that he sang Spin Out for the second time.
Well, it's in the credits, and then he sings it.
And it was like, all right, well, that's fine. I don't know. I guess I just, like you said, the story is not meant to be interesting as much as it is meant to be a bridge from one song to another and mm-hmm. showcasing Elvis's talent. And, you know, the studios wanted their artists in movies like this at the time.
Yeah.
And so I get all that. It was just the combination of kind of just okay songs with just okay movie plot that I just had a hard time getting into this one as anything more than just okay.
Right.
And I couldn't even appreciate the guilty pleasure, quote unquote, ness of it because of that, because I kept sitting there going, okay, but what? I remember thinking to myself, like, what is Greg getting out of this that I'm not getting out of it?
It's a valid question. I don't think anybody that has never seen this before or didn't see it in their childhood or when they were in their, you know, at least 20 years after it was made, is going to get the same type of enjoyment out of it that I do. I mean, some may, you know, find it entertaining. If you're an Elvis fan and you want to check these out, they are ridiculous. I mean, but there's a element of fun to all of these movies, because there's a thing in Elvis's quotes of the past when he was making a movie, and he was the director. In fact, the director who directed this, Norman Turok, started yelling at him for acting up on the set. And Elvis told him, man, these movies are made to be fun. And when they stop being fun, I'm going to stop doing them. And that was just the idea behind it. And that's what, you know, if you don't find it fun, that's perfectly fine. It's kind of a product of its time. I like it as a little time capsule for that. But you make a really good point that I want to go back to, is if it had been anybody else but Elvis in this plot with these songs, the movie still, I think, would have been entertaining, because the songs are ripe for that era. Pre-1966 is really right before the Summer of Love, before things start really, it was still had these peppy 60s songs. But if you take like a Frankie Avalon or a Frankie Valli or a Bobby V or Bobby Vinton or any of these guys that did it, like if you watch any of those beach movies that Frankie Avalon made with Annette Funicello, they're the same things. They're just beach blanket bingo. And there are fun teen movies that during when these were released, that teenagers would go to the drive-in, you'd have the music on in the background, they'd be farting around and just enjoying the environment. And that's kind of what I get out of this. The movie itself, like I said, the song Smorgasbord, it's a silly song about having so many women you don't know what to do with them. And that's what he's basically talking about. He's wandering around the room just performing this thing because he's Elvis and because he has all these women that want him. One of the things, though, about that routine that I do want to mention is Dodie Marshall is the brunette that plays Susan that doesn't really say anything, but starts dancing. She is so cute. She was known for My Favorite Martian, the TV show. She was like a TV actress. And I really like her in the film because, of course, spoiler alert, she ends up becoming the drummer at the end of the film, which I think is a cute twist. I think it's awesome. But again, I find it like when I watched it actually like 3 weeks ago before we even had to, because I was just in the mood for it. I'm like, well, it's coming up on our podcast. I'm going to go ahead and watch it now. And I just get a kick out of it. There's so many things about it that I like. There's the dynamic where the three girls are coming after him. But then you also sense that each one of these girls, there's somebody that is kind of after them as well. So like the drummer, that his drummer in the band, there is the police officer who's like the nicest cop in the world that stops him over during their camp out dinner, which actually, again, the camp out thing cracked me up. Now, she's a gourmet chef. She has the candelabra type thing.
ACAB. What? Nothing. All cops are bastards.
Oh, well. Yeah, but not theatrical cops. This guy is actually...
No, this guy was fine.
Yeah, he was actually a gourmet chef himself, and that's what they had in common. But then you had the dad who tries to get her to get Elvis to sing the song to his daughter,
mm-hmm.
and the guy who's a kind of a dick, but he wants him to race for. Of course, he ends up like into the woman who's stalking Elvis.
Yes,
and I do like that. And then, but Shelley Fabre, she's probably my favorite. Like, you have Bond girls and everything like that. She's probably my favorite Elvis co-star. You know, she went on to do the TV show Coach, and she was really good in that in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, Dauber and...
Yeah, she did this and Girl Happy, and she was the lead in that. She's really good in that, too. And I almost had a hard time choosing between this and Girl Happy for Guilty Pleasures, because they're kind of similar in tone, but they're both They're both fun, so I chose this one. I watched them both back to back and decided to go with this.
It's interesting that we talk about the music and, like I said, you know, having, without the benefit of knowing that Elvis is a phenomenon, that he's got a, you know, all of these hits. I think if you play this for someone blind who's never heard of Elvis before, I think the music is just kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure you're going to make a fan out of somebody by playing them this record. It's also interesting because if this is 1966 and this is a soundtrack of kind of hokey-ish pop music, this is the same year the Beatles put Revolver out into the world.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's kind of probably you start to see the end of this type of music because the Beatles are a bell cow for what everybody else is doing, or for what a lot of popular artists are doing, not everybody. And the same year he's singing Spin Out and Smorgasbord, they're doing Eleanor Rigby and, you know, like Here, There, and Everywhere. So, you know, I think that's an interesting juxtaposition, too, is just where those time, you know, people say you can only be an Elvis person or a Beatles person, and you can't be both. And we know that's not true. No, there's no rules on the things that you like. But it is interesting as you watch their career progressions and kind of where they're at, you know, with that kind of stuff. And he's doing these. And the Beatles did quite a bit of hokey pop songs, and they did quite a bit of hokey movie, you know, dumb shit as well.
My wife hates the movie Help. I love the movie Help. I think it's ridiculously slapstick, but it is. If you're not a Beatles fan, that movie is kind of really stupid.
Insufferable.
Yeah, and I enjoy it, but I enjoy it as a Beatles fan. I love when they sing You Gotta Hide Your Love Away, and they're in the recessed beds, and they're just chilling, and the guy is mowing the grass with two chomping teeth. I think it's just an hilarious moment in the film, and I love Help. But Help was close to this time where this came out, where Spin Out came out. And, you know, we talk about Elvis and the Beatles. You know, Elvis, of course, you know, put the Beatles on their own trajectory. They were into not just the Elvis, they were into Chuck Berry and Little Richard and a lot of the other rock artists, but they were huge fans and got to meet him that one fateful night where they got to play pool with him. And that pool table is like in the Elvis Presley restaurant in Memphis, which is kind of cool that you can go check out the pool table that they played on. But they did mention that you just know the business. At this point in Elvis's career, which is disappointing to me, let's be honest, I'm an Elvis fan. At this point in his career, this movie is disappointing. But it's all that we had at that time because Tom Parker, who I refused to call Colonel because he was not a freaking Colonel, he was a rat bastard that stole half of Elvis's money throughout his entire career, used and abused the guy, and in my opinion, killed him because he had him doing three shows a freaking night until he dropped dead.
Yeah.
And this guy was in it for the money and signed him to this massive movie contract. He didn't want Elvis touring because the bastard couldn't go to Europe because he was wanted for murder. So Elvis wanted to tour Europe. He wanted to continue to do the music in the 50s that made him Elvis. Instead, he gets saddled with this. Now, when I was growing up, I did not know all of this.
Sure.
So this is all we had. And so when you're a fan of something, like when I became a fan of the Beatles, I think it started for me, I think the very first album I listened to was Magical Mystery Tour, like from beginning to end. I heard songs here and there.
Sure.
But it was the first CD that I actually sat down and listened to. And after I played that a bunch of times, I had to, you know, try something else. Find another, you know, then I go to the White Album, which blew me away. Now I couldn't get enough. And by the time I finished their late career, which I did first, I started delving into their earlier stuff, which is weird because I went backwards. I started with the newer stuff and then went back.
I mean, I in the same way that I don't think that you could make a blank slate listener a fan of Elvis listening to Spin Out, I'm not real sure that you could make a blank slate listener a fan of the Beatles by playing them the White Album.
Oh, true. Yeah.
It can be kind of challenging.
It is.
You know, and it's not the poppy bubblegum hits. And we kind of, I think that's the fun thing about the Beatles is that, you know, they were only a band for what, 7 years or 9 years.
Yeah.
And so to go from Love Me Do and, you know, I Saw Her Standing There to Abbey Road in that short amount of time is really crazy. But like progressing with them is part of it.
Oh yeah.
And it's what makes album after album after album a little more accessible. But I think like starting with the White Album would be really crazy for somebody. I think you could find them going, you know, I'm not sure I like these Beatles.
And that was the thing for me was that, you know, I think I was in my early 20s and I had heard I Am the Walrus. I had heard the singles on the radio growing up, but I'd never listened to a CD, like a whole album. So I decided, I'm going to get this. I'm going to enjoy it. And then I couldn't get enough. I wanted to listen to every track on every album, things I'd never heard before. Listening to Rocky Raccoon, Happiness is a Warm Gun, I'm So Tired, which are songs that are not in the mainstream of Beatledom, but they're out there and they're great on the White Album. But yeah, a band that goes from Till There Was You to Helter Skelter in a matter of years is insane.
Revolution number 9. Like these are
but
not easy. They're not accessible as far as the Beatles are concerned.
I'm still not a Revolution number 9 fan. But what's interesting is with Elvis, it's almost the reverse.
Yeah.
You got a guy that did Jailhouse Rock and Heartbreak Hotel and then is doing Smorgasbord. Or if you really like Smorgasbord, if you really like that song, I know do. I know you closet do. It's okay.
I don't.
So you should hear him sing Old MacDonald in the movie Double Trouble. He literally sings Old MacDonald Has a Farm. Now, granted, it's horrible. But this, for me, the point I was making was when I was leaving home and I didn't have any more Elvis, I started going back and getting his early stuff. And there was stuff that I really liked. I got Stung, Treat Me Nice. They're just that early, like 4 or 5 years, there's some really amazing rock songs. But once I'd listened to them over and over, I started just checking everything out. And I remembered the movies. And it was just one of those things where, are these my favorite songs of Elvis? Probably not. But I do enjoy them as for what they are. They're definitely down at the bottom, but they're still catchy. So like you said, if Frankie Avalon did them, they'd be fun and hokey, kind of cute little musical songs, and it would be a fun musical. But you're holding Elvis to a much higher standard.
I mean, I think that's probably it. Yeah. I think that's a really great summation of where I sit on this, because it's not like I would want to not like this. And I went into this, I would like to think, with the understanding that just like you watching, you know, Legally Blonde on my behalf, like that I don't think that this movie is, you know, some sort of example of modern classic cinema. It's just a guilty pleasure. And I went into it with that same mind frame, just that this movie happens to be much older than that, because you're much older than I am. And so that makes sense.
Right.
And I've seen movies like this. I like musicals and I like musicals that are older. I mean, I really enjoy The Sound of Music and My Fair Lady. So these aren't foreign concepts to me. Mm-hmm. I just had a really hard time. I think you said it exactly right, that knowing who Elvis is and the impact that he had on popular music and that he just had on culture and like TCB and karate and the gold sunglasses and the suits from the Las Vegas thing, you know, and the hip wiggling, you know, we see calls back to that in Forrest Gump, you know, that it was a cultural phenomenon, and you've got that. And on the other hand, you've got 1966 classic Elvis movie Spin Out and the accompanying album, which is just not great. You know, the songs on it are so, as my kids would say, mid. Greg, they're mid.
Yeah, they are to a point. I mean, one of the things that is, again, I like it for what it is, but I still think that he would have put out much more edgier, interesting stuff had Parker not saddled him with the movies, but I'll take what I can get. And I can find value in this, like the silly Beach Shack song that's on the screen right now. It's just stupid and funny. It is what it is. He does his little stab at reggae, if you will, in this song.
Yeah.
And it is what it is.
Well, I wanted to stab him back.
And honestly, though, the thing is that these were on when I was growing up, and they just are what they are. They're Saturday morning goofiness. I would recommend watching them with a few adult beverages. They make them so much more fun. The car stuff at the end, I will say this. The car racing scenes at the end with the actual, like the road race, I find enjoyable almost more than I do racing like Fast and the Furious movies. They do real stunts in this. They had the actual race cars.
Yeah, practical stunts, sure.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the practical stunts. They didn't go to the moon like they do in Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, that's
and they fun. Have some silly, funny moments. And you know Elvis is going to win, and it's crazy. But the cars of that time, being a racing fan, I enjoy what they do in this one.
Spoiler alert, by the way. You need to say that before you say who wins the race of this 50-year-old movie.
Also, spoiler alert, one of my favorite parts is the ending, where you think he might get with Shelley Febre, maybe. He doesn't get with any of the girls. He doesn't land the women. It's one of the few times Elvis doesn't get the girl.
He's not trying to get the girl. No, he loves being a race car band man. And you know what? Who can fucking blame him?
And that's why he sings Smorgasbord for crying out loud. Yeah, because
he's making his way around.
That's why he sings Smorgasbord, is because he doesn't want to be tied down. And luckily, at the end of the movie, him actually escaping matrimony with each of these three women at the end of the film is actually like the climax, the win. It's the triumphant moment for him when he's like, I like the way he does it. You know, I married Les to, you know, so-and-so. I married Diana, you know, and also, but he married him to the other guy. So I thought that was good. You know who else I liked in the movie? I will say this real quick before we finish up with Spin Out. I really enjoyed the old couple for the moment they're in there, that where they try to drive Elvis away by running him out of town, but it's really a ruse to get him to want to stay by having the sheriff run him out of town. So he convinces the elderly couple that live in the mansion next door to the Fox Shoes, to the rich people, to let him stay there. And he does so by like buttering them up and convincing them to go on a second honeymoon. I thought this scene, probably one of my favorites. It's very adorable.
It was very cute. Yes, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, so we actually have that scene.
Okay, let's watch it, you know? Why not?
Yeah, let's do that real quick.
Mike McCoy. Mr. Ranley, I have a message for you. Is it okay to speak in front of this young lady?
Young lady? Oh, this is my wife. Are you sure?
Okay, he says, young lady.
This bitch?
Pilot, when you looked at Menard, did you see the tall, handsome, vigorous man that you married 37 years ago? Well, did you?
Violet. Oh, no, it's not her fault. After all, I'm not as handsome as I used to be.
I'm not as young either. Well, you're not as old as you're behaving either. And neither are you.
I thought it's really cute.
When was the last time you had some fun?
I like this.
Well, on our honeymoon.
Violet.
It's true. When we got back, you went to work for Papa.
I like the way he does that.
Try to do something about this. Okay?
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
And then he sends him on a trip and then he gets to stay in their house completely. It's like an Airbnb. He gets to stay there and throw Beach Shack parties and smorgasbord parties.
Yeah, with Captain Gooch and the Shrimp Shack Shooters.
Anyway, so yes, I same thing with Roller Boogie. So guilty pleasures for me, like we talked about, what is a guilty pleasure and why does this category exist in our first round for the second season? And it's really because these movies are important to us for different reasons. They don't necessarily have to be good films, and they don't necessarily have to be bad films. Some people really like this movie, and some people think it's one of the worst ever made. I don't care. It doesn't bother me none. I find value.
It shouldn't bother you. And that is the thing about it is
exactly.
I think embracing the things you like. I mean, in general in life, like these movies that we're picking, can kind of be an allegory for just embracing the things that make you unique, embracing the things that make you weird, or just the things that you like. You know, I'm allowed to like Moulin Rouge a lot, and you know, guilty pleasure or not, it's something to not be ashamed of. And liking Spin Out maybe is, but
I am not ashamed.
Before we move on, Greg, yeah. I wondered if I could.
You could.
The lady who's writing the book, The Mating Habits of the Average American Male.
Yep.
Reminds me of a anecdote.
Okay.
That I would like to dramatically read for you right now.
Okay.
A man boards an airplane.
All right.
And as he settles in, he glances up and sees the most beautiful woman he's ever seen boarding the plane. He soon realizes that she's heading straight towards his seat, and as fate would have it, she took the seat right beside his. Eager to strike up a conversation, he blurts out, "Business trip or pleasure?" She turned, smiled, and said, "Business. I'm going to the annual Nymphomaniacs of America convention in Boston." He swallowed hard. Here was the most gorgeous woman he had ever seen sitting next to him, and she was going to a meeting of nymphomaniacs. Struggling to maintain his composure, he calmly asked, "What's your business at the convention?" "I'm a lecturer," she responded. "I use information that I have learned from my personal experiences to debunk some of the popular myths about sexuality." "Really?" he said. "And what kind of myths are those?" "Well," she explained, "one popular myth is that African-American men are the most well-endowed of all men, when in fact, research shows it is the Native American Indian who is most likely to possess that trait." "Interesting," he says. "Another popular myth," she says, "is that Frenchmen are the best lovers, when actually my research indicates that it is men of Mexican descent who are the best lovers. I've also discovered that the lover with the best stamina is the Southern redneck." "Very interesting research," he says. Well, suddenly the woman becomes a little uncomfortable and blushed. "I'm sorry," she said. "I shouldn't really be discussing all this with you. I don't even know your name." "Tonto," the man says. "Tonto Gonzalez, but my friends call me Bubba."
Okay. Oh, goodness. And on that note.
Tonto Gonzalez! But his friends call him Bubba.
That was almost like a Paul Harvey story.
And now you know the rest of the story.
And you do. You heard it here first on Box Office Battles. But So Spin Out's in the can. We've got to talk about Spin Out's opponent, which I like to refer to this whole episode as Elvis versus Jaws. And that's where we've got next is the Jaws tribute. I liken this movie to a Jaws tribute. And if you didn't pick up on that, then you've missed the point entirely. Deep Blue Sea is a tongue firmly in cheek, shark monster movie of the highest order. And it's a fun watch, but it's clearly and without a doubt a tribute to the originator of the shark mania, which is Jaws. So I picked this because I watched this like every other year. Like we've talked about with your guilty pleasures where you've said that it's something that if it's on, you're going to stop and watch it. I don't think I've ever turned this movie off if I've ever come across it. And I think that there are times where like if everybody's in bed, and there's nothing going on and I'm going, what do I want to watch? I have a set of movies that I do rotate. One of them is the like new Dawn of the Dead with Ving Rhames. I absolutely adore that. I'll watch it 100 times. Just think it's great, but it's not a guilty pleasure. This one is on that list because it's considered a cheese fest. And it's but what I think that a lot of people don't get about it is it's purposefully a cheese fest. I think people that I've heard that don't like this film don't understand what it was trying to do with this genre. And once you get that and you watch it with those goggles on, it becomes a much more enjoyable film.
This is the same argument I made last episode with Dude, Where's My Car? Mm-hmm. In that we must take into account the background and purpose of making the movie as we start to judge its merits. And I agree with you because the movie started out and I was like, okay, this is kind of a little fucking hokey.
It is.
And then I was like, wait a second. This movie's fucking hokey. And if I'll embrace the hokey and embrace it, I did, Greg. Because I'm sitting there and I'm just like, oh no! The shark pulled a helicopter into the water! And like, oh no! Samuel L. Jackson's giving a very important monologue about teamwork and got bit in half! Oh no! Like, and it was just, man, this was fucking fun.
It is.
And it was so great. They make multiple references. The one I remember that lets you know that they're in on the joke is LL Cool J gets up at one point and he goes, man, the brothers never survive stuff like this. Yes. No. Now, I will say this movie was made inherently easier to get through because very quickly I found myself, and you tell me if you have the same experience with this, I very quickly started rooting for the sharks because all these people, except for LL Cool J, are kind of shit for brains or like actually evil people who the ethics of science be damned decided that they would enlarge sharks' brains for what they consider to be a very altruistic purpose of trying to cure Alzheimer's.
Right.
But like there is no way to do this, or there's a right way and there's a wrong way and they're wrong. And once you get that established, there were only two people that I felt sad got eaten by sharks. Yeah. One was Janice from The Sopranos.
Yes, but she doesn't get eaten.
She got blown up when the sharks blowed up the
She seemed like
lab.
She was so much fun. She's in there dancing and freaking thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So Janice and then the computer guy, the scientist.
Oh, Michael Rapaport.
Michael Rapaport. Yeah, Michael Rapaport. Young.
Tom is the character's name. Yes. Very young Michael Rapaport.
But all the rest of them, I was like, yeah, just get fucking eaten.
I mean, even the bird is kind of an asshole, and that's what's funny is they actually kill the pet.
Listen,
we
got to
talk
about this parrot, Greg, because I read an interesting fact.
Yes.
They couldn't afford, the production couldn't afford a parrot that was fully trained to both sit and or fly on command and also speak. Mm. So they ended up paying for two separate birds, one that was good at flying and the other that was good at sitting still and talking. And I'm thinking to myself, I guess I don't understand the economics of parrot movie actors because it seems like paying for two parrots that are good at one thing by the transitive theory of math would be the same as paying for one bird that does two things well. But I guess that's not the case.
Well, you'd think that they would just dub the voice of the parrot in and get it to say, why do they need one that actually talks?
They didn't have the production budget for it.
For overdubbing.
A bird?
Yeah.
So now you have to hire a third bird no. to come in to a enclosed voice
with the mic. Yeah.
Yeah, with the screen in front of the mic and they put the movie up on the TV. I was a voice actor for 7 minutes. So I know how
that's
it all
works.
That's
not what I was saying. I'm not saying
and
you
then
hire
the director's like, could you just say it with like a little more excitement? And the parrot goes, kiss my ass!
All right. That's funny, but that's not, you know, that's not what I meant. You meant a voice actor pretending to be a parrot and
like
overdubbing
I just
them,
did.
Like you just did. It could have done that, but the parrot was an asshole. And when it does get eaten, it's one of the funnier parts of the movie. The movie's hilarious. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was the different tributes that they do with Jaws.
Okay.
And that a lot of people may not pick up on. I am a Jaws aficionado. I watch. In fact, I am going to see Jaws, the original, in IMAX on September 1st or 2nd for the 50th anniversary.
Nice.
I've got a 4K. I've watched it 100,000 times. I adore Jaws 2, and that one's kind of ragged on, but I think it's great. Jaws 3, not the greatest, but it's got a moment in there in Jaws 3 where a victim is in the shark's mouth and the jaws are clamping down and you see it from his point of view and you can hear his bones crunching as he's being eaten. It is so off-putting that it sticks out in my mind. The rest of the movie, it's all right. But that moment is incredible. The rest of it's just really bad special effects. But one and two.
Was Spielberg involved in any of the sequels?
No, just the first.
No, he bailed out because he's like, I told the story I wanted to tell. And the studio said, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
But we know we can make a boatload of money
by
putting Jaws in space or whatever.
Yeah. Robert Shaw, of course, didn't come back because he got eaten. And Richard Dreyfuss decided not to.
Richard Dreyfuss.
He decided not to come back for the sequel. So it's just Roy Scheider and his wife. And they have a whole thing with the Sheriff Brody. Yeah. Sheriff Brody's kids go out and the shark goes after him. So
did you know that the license plate that they pull out of this shark in Deep Blue Sea?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're going to get to that. Well, just get to it then.
Well, right off the bat, like in the opening scene where they capture the shark. First of all, that scene where they capture the shark and it's going after a catamaran, it's reminiscent of Jaws 2 when the teenagers are on the catamaran and the shark attacks them. Comes right out of Jaws 2. The scene with the shark where they capture the tiger shark, after that he brings him in and he has a license plate in his mouth. You can see it here on this image. That's actual license plate from the one they take out of the shark in the original Jaws. They use the same prop. This movie has so many Easter eggs to the original Jaws. It's outstanding. The helicopter, that happened in Jaws 2. Jaws comes out of the water in Jaws 2 and drags the helicopter into the ocean. There's so many things like that that were really, really neat. And so that's one of the things I love about the parallels of Jaws. They were clearly going, hey, we're going to do Jaws, but we're going to take it. We're going to amp it up to a 10th degree. And so you get these genetically engineered sharks that not only so there's Jaws 4, The Revenge. That's actually what it's called. Jaws 4, The Revenge. In Jaws 4, The Revenge, Sheriff Brody's family, Sheriff Brody's dead now. So it's his wife and her grown up children have to run away from the shark because it's stalking them.
On land?
On Amity Island. No, just don't go in the water. But yet they feel the need to go to the Caribbean to escape the shark. This is Jaws 4, by the way. And the shark follows them to the Caribbean. First of all, just stop doing vacations.
Shark is pissed. I mean, it seems like a shark attack is one of the easier attacks to avoid.
Just stay out of the water. But it's taking it personal that its other shark friends were killed by the Brodies. So now it wants revenge. That's why it's literally called Jaws the Revenge.
I mean, this is kind of like one of the reasons why, you know, you bomb what you consider to be a terrorist group and kill a bunch of civilians. Guess what you just did?
Yeah.
Created a bunch more terrorists because now they're fucking pissed.
And they will.
As they should be because you just blew up a bunch of kids. That's how it works. And when you do it to sharks, they don't forget.
And terrorists will follow you to the Caribbean if they have to get their That's revenge. Right. They don't care where you vacation.
Easier to avoid a shark attack than a terror attack.
True.
Ask.
All right, we're going to stop. Yeah, you can't get it out, can you?
I'm going to let it go.
All right. That's probably for the best. That's probably for the best.
But I mean, I had it. I want everybody to know that I had it. I was ready.
I think they know what you were going to say.
To drop it.
They know without knowing.
But I just decided not to, because I decided today I'm going to have a good day.
Yeah. And that's good.
And I'm not going to make any 9/11 jokes.
No, don't do that, please.
Not today.
Not today. All right. So the point I was making with that, with Jaws the Revenge, is that's another tribute that they do in this movie is that they genetically engineer these sharks to where they take shit personal. And it's funny that they taunt the people inside the enclosure, inside the base, you know. And the one shark, when he gets a hold of Stellan Skarsgård's character in the stretcher, and he starts slamming it against... I mean, where else can you see that in a movie?
It wasn't enough to drown him.
No, he had the rebreather on.
Yeah.
So he's stuck on this freaking stretcher that falls into the ocean with the rebreather on, and that shark is like, yeah, bitch. And he just starts slamming him against the glass. It's great.
And breaks again, the glass.
When the glass breaks, that happens in Jaws 3. There's a scene where they have an underwater enclosure to watch the sharks, and the shark comes right through the glass. These are so many different homages that Rennie Harlan, the director, and the writers, they put into this movie. And when I first started watching it, every one of them made me laugh. And I knew right off the bat, you bring Samuel L. Jackson in doing the cheesy speeches at the beginning, and you just get it. There's a lot of these movies that were out in the late 90s that were like Leviathan and The Abyss and Deep Star 6. They were all copying these undersea adventures. And this one is almost like Airplane of those films, but it takes itself just seriously enough to make it even more funny. I mean, there's so many moments. The whole thing with Stellan Skarsgård's character where everybody's getting on him for smoking. And then, then he lights the cigarette near the shark that they bring up out of the water, and it munches on the arm with the cigarette in it. It's little things like that that really just blow me away in this film. I enjoy it. I love it to death.
It was brilliant. I didn't know that Samuel L. Jackson was in this. I mean, he's just a pretty early, but I didn't know going into it. But it kind of feels to me like anything that he's in after Pulp Fiction, I just have a hard time, or like I just know I can't take it seriously because he's just been in a bunch of bullshit ever since.
Yeah.
So when he showed up, it was another clue to me, like, okay, this isn't going to be bad.
Yeah.
Because this is what this is for. He like really signaled it to me. And again, shark pulling helicopter into the water.
You've obviously never seen Snakes on a Plane.
Well,
that's Samuel L. Jackson. It's great.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that he can't be great. I just, when he shows up in a movie like this, then I just immediately go, okay, well, I know what we're getting into then. And now I can just kind of relax and just let it happen to me.
And that's what he's there for. Yeah. He's this very interesting character, and we're going to get into his scene real quick. But one thing I do want to mention, Mike Florida has mentioned that the actual Deep Blue Sea soundtrack was produced on a vinyl record. It's available used on Amazon, so I may look into that.
He doesn't give us a price point here, does he? So,
you know what's interesting is I could actually go over. I actually have the Popstar soundtrack on vinyl as well. So if I got the Deep Blue Sea, I would have all four of my Guilty Pleasure movies on soundtracks on vinyl. I think I need to make that happen.
Vinyl, $30.
That's not bad. That's not bad. But see, I've got a Popstar as well.
It doesn't look super nice like the jacket that you have, but...
That's all right.
All right.
It might be good. So the whole thing with the Samuel L. Jackson scene is really, really funny. It goes on way too long.
Mm-hmm.
The scene is excruciatingly long, but it's so funny because he's this character. He's like this rich, you know, entrepreneur that works, you know, CEO of this company that's there to inspect what they're doing, but he has a history of being in a snow-covered mountain, and I think the Himalayas. No, it was the Alps, because she says Himalayas, and he corrects her and says the Alps. And then even LL Cool J's character tells him that the brothers don't need to be messing around no mountains, and gives him that little joke. So you get that he's been in a tragedy, and so they're stuck in this moment. Samuel L. Jackson has survived, and he just starts giving them this lecture about, think water's fast, you should see ice. So while he's talking, I'm going to talk over this just a little bit, because he goes on forever. My wife is watching this, and she hasn't quite got the parody stuff yet, that this is really just... She thinks this is a serious moment.
I don't know exactly.
And she stood up. She goes, I think I'm going to need some antacid for all this cheese. Because yeah. this is, she's like, this is a cheesy speech.
Yeah, he's laying it on. He's right, though. Teamwork is important.
Now, we took an oath.
All people that didn't
make
it.
He took an oath. I took an oath.
Swore that we said it was the snow that killed the other two.
It wasn't the snow that killed the other two.
Doesn't hold a candle to man.
That is great. Nature
now you've
can
seen
be
how bad things can get.
Oh, this is
and
the
how
best.
Quick they can get that way. Well, they can get a whole lot worse. So we're not going to fight anymore. We're going to pull together and we're going to find a way to get out of here. First, we're going to seal off this.
Oh, shit.
Seriously,
it was so
all reactions are just the best.
It is my favorite.
I'm like, man, the guy was on the right track too. You know, teamwork is important, Greg.
Yes,
especially in a situation where a situation a lot of us have found ourselves in. Genetically engineered sharks yeah. are trying to trick you into flooding your own research lab so that they can get to the surface and get through the fence.
Yep.
That right. If you're not going to work together, then like together we stand, divided we fall is what I've always said. I don't know if you've ever heard that before.
Never. No, that's, you should write that down.
It's like, if you want your dream to work, then you need to work together.
Ah,
so I like think that's how the saying goes.
So like teamwork makes the dream work?
That would have been so much better. You're fucking right. Damn it. And it like rhymes. So, you yes. know, good advice it rhymes a lot. Like a stitch in time saves nine. Although that's not really a rhyme because time and nine is not a rhyme.
It's not. It's
close, but not a rhyme. But anyway, good advice always rhymes. So if there's anything people take from tonight's episode, that's what I would like it to be.
That's good. I would say stay away from research facilities and genetically engineered sharks, and also stay away from 1966 Elvis movies.
If your family kind of has a historical like situation over multiple years and multiple locations and multiple events of like shark attacks, then just stay the fuck out of the water. That doesn't rhyme, but still good advice.
I wonder if the Brodies from the Jaws movies had moved to like Nebraska, would like they be on a lake somewhere and then the jaw just comes popping up like it went through the tributaries. Maybe it went
up. I would like it to remain unexplained how it got there. Or it built a tunnel, a series of tubes out of coral, and used it as breathing apparatus.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And made their way across. It could be like that movie, the David Lynch movie we watched with that jackass on a tractor.
Come on, that was a good
and
movie.
And it could be like these sharks. That's act one, right? The shark's trying to get from point A to point B.
What if the shark rode a lawnmower from Amity Island all the way to Nebraska?
Mm-hmm. Now we're talking.
The Jaws.
If you went to film school, you could make this happen if you wanted to.
The Jaws
story. I feel
story.
Like you're just intentionally not.
We could get David. Well, we can't get David Lynch to direct it. We could have, but it's too late now.
It is too late.
Yeah.
He died. Okay. Right before we made the ill-fated decision to watch 8 David Lynch films, thinking anybody was going to enjoy that.
Anyway, yeah, so it's this movie makes fun of all of those things. Now, granted, the original Jaws is a classic, and I like the second one, but it is the idea of this. It's never to be taken. It's a monster movie. You know, looking at the trivia, just one of the things is that Samuel Jackson signed up immediately because he got this script. Stephen King, this was like the first movie he saw after his van accident where he nearly died when he got hit by a freaking van, if you didn't know that. And he's in a wheelchair, and somebody took him to this movie, and Stephen King got it. He knew this was not a horror movie that you took seriously. So, yeah. What did Mike say here?
He says, read recently.
Ride Forever, Sharks on a Tractor.
Yeah. I read recently that Stephen King's wife almost divorced him because he wouldn't stop listening to that song Mambo Number 5.
Oh, really?
And I'm not kidding. Like, that sounds like a completely made-up sentence, like George Carlin used to say. Like, for the first time in human history, that those words got put together in that order.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm certain that I read that, and he just really liked, what's that guy's name that sang it?
Lou Bega. Yeah.
Like, a little bit of money. Like, that guy fucking loved that song.
I couldn't imagine. I mean, I probably would divorce my wife if she played that all the time. Now, my wife almost divorced me because every time she would watch TV, when I first discovered that I had the control of the Bluetooth appliances in the household, I could be in another room and I would always play the Narwhal song no matter whatever she was watching. So if she was watching, she liked, back in the day, she liked Regis and Kelly and Kelly and Michael and all that good stuff. You know, Kelly Ripa.
Kathy Lee.
Well, not, it was after Kathy. Well, she did like Regis and Kathy Lee, but we're talking after that. You know, okay. Kelly Ripa took over. And she'd be just settling down to watch it, and I'll be on the toilet listening to the theme song start. And then I would tap into the TV. And have you ever seen the Narwhal song? Have you ever seen it?
No, I don't even know what you're talking about.
You need to go to YouTube, and I recommend everybody go to the YouTube.
Narwhal.
I wish I had it handy, but it's very loud and it's very obnoxious. And it's an animated song about narwhals. It basically goes, narwhal swimming in the ocean, causing a commotion because they are so awesome. So I would play that on her TV. It would just come on. And I would hear from the downstairs, cut it out!
And it brought me, I liked both your version of the song and your impersonation.
It brought me so much joy. It was a nice gag for a while, but I can imagine that she, if I would have done that just one more time too many, she would have divorced me.
You cut it off at the right time.
I also loved to, when I had control of the TVs, I also like to change my son's television to the logo network, the gay and lesbian network, no matter what he was watching. A lot of times he was into X Games.
Is that why he turned out gay, you think?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know for sure. But
kids are very susceptible to stuff like that, from what I understand.
But I would be outside his door, and I would hear the X Games on, and then I would hit the button to change it to logo, and all I would hear was, hey.
Hey, yeah, all of a sudden he's watching Queer as Fuck or whatever. Yeah,
then he would change it back, and I would change it. I would do this over and over again. Eventually, he'd come downstairs and go, "Dad, I don't know what's going on, but the TV continually changes it to the logo network." I was like, "What's that?" He's like, "That's the gay and lesbian channel." I said, "Well, maybe your TV knows you better than you do."
Yeah, predictive TV habits.
It's a precog. Precog TV. It knows what you want to watch before
it's
you
like
watch it.
When I know in my mind that I need to go to the dentist, and then all of a sudden I'm on Reddit and there's an ad for like toothpaste or
exactly.
something.
Exactly.
Fucking no.
Yeah. But anyway, back to the movie. What do you think about this bitch right here? Other than, you know, she's got this nice scene where she's in her underwear. She's horrible.
Again, so you set the premise up. Oh, all right. So. You set the premise up like she's got family members that went through Alzheimer's. And, of course, that's an awful thing to go through for everybody involved. And the meaning behind the research is important and for has value. And then she takes it a step too far. There apparently is an ending to this movie where she lives.
That would be horrible.
And audiences fucking hated it. And so they did a quick reshoot where she... Because she makes it to the end.
Yes.
You know.
And she sacrifices herself.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a quick scene, too, where it almost does feel like an afterthought, because she's kind of the main, a villain to this, aren't sharks.
She's kind of the female protagonist. They try to make her sympathetic, but the fact that when you find out that she's done all this, and then she goes back to get, puts everybody's lives in jeopardy to get the research data so that nobody dies in vain, and then, of course, LL Cool J gives her a reading of the Riot Act. But she's like the female protagonist, but I think that, yeah, the producers didn't realize how hated she was because she's the one who caused all this. She caused everybody's death by enlarging the brains of the sharks, giving them a pissed off attitude. One of the things, though, I wanted to point out in this scene, it's another tribute to Jaws. She's standing on this and she takes her wetsuit off. That's why she's naked. Just so everybody knows, she just doesn't do like a Sigourney Weaver where she gets naked for the hell of it. She gets naked because she wants to stand on the wetsuit so that she can insulate herself. Then she rips out pretty handily, rips out the electric cable from the wall and is able to electrocute the shark, which is how they killed the shark in Jaws 2. Just saying. There's so many like this. When this scene happened the first time I saw the film, I was literally the first time seeing all these Easter eggs. And it was like the people that saw Minecraft recently. They said kids went to Minecraft and there's so many Easter eggs in Minecraft, they lost their minds. Like, they were so loud because they were freaking out. I was that way when I watched this movie because there's so many things about this that they do with the Jaws theme. So it's great stuff.
That's an interesting view for you because you are a fan of those movies and so you picked up on that stuff. I mean, I've seen the original Jaws one time because I had to watch it for the Jarrett Goes to the Movies podcast, and that's the only one I've seen. So I don't have that same, like, I didn't have that same experience watching it and picking up on those things. I probably, if you'd have asked me, assumed that there must be some kind of wink, wink, nod, nod, you know, because it's a shark movie. But I mean, like, this could be very easily on heavy rotation during Shark Week on Discovery Channel or whatever. Because, like, I've seen dumber shit than this there. Yeah. You know, 6,000-pound shark versus 4,000-pound gorilla or whatever. Like, that's not the movie I want to see. But this one is fun. This one's good. Yeah. I mean, I would probably watch 4,000-pound gorilla versus 6,000-pound shark.
So my aunt used to watch all those films, and when my son was young, I would drop him off at her house, and he would watch Mecha Shark and all
these
really, really bad sci-fi channel movies, and he absolutely loved it. They're a lot of fun, and it's like they got Sharknado. I love the Jaws films, but I like this because it really tries to take itself seriously, but you know it's not.
Yeah.
So it's pretending like it's a serious film when all the while you know that it isn't, and then of course Mike brought up poking sharks in the eyes and in the balls. Yeah. LL Cool J gets to jab his cross. I thought, you know, when I saw this, LL Cool J says, "Your brother never survives these type of movies." And then he ends up getting, you know, munched on by the shark, but he actually uses his cross to save himself. But even funnier than that, I think, is when he gets out of the water and Thomas Jane's character is on the shark riding it, and he's yelling for him to shoot. And he goes right through Thomas Jane's leg. If you don't realize at that point, an hour and 40 minutes into the film, that this is a kind of a comedy, then I've got no hope for you. That all is. And of course they use that to blow up the shark into bits. Just like Brody blew up the original Jaws in Jaws, the first one. So, yeah.
Well, it does go to show that through Christ Jesus, all things are possible.
Very true.
Including stabbing sharks in eyeballs. Yeah. And
that's what they say. If you punch a shark in the nose, that it'll go away. I don't even want to know that. I don't even want to find out if you punch
a shark. I mean, it depends on the size of the shark for sure.
Yeah.
But I need to be significantly bigger than this shark for me to even think about
You punch a little shark in the nose.
For sure. Like, I wonder if the SPCA has a view on that. But, like,
so would that be
you
funny?
Know, you show up to, like, a county fair, and they'll be like, you can box with this kangaroo, or you can...
in the old days. Or,
you know, whatever, wrestle this gorilla. Hope it doesn't rip your arm off and beat you to death with it. But if I showed up to, like, one of these little shitty, like, backcountry, I live in the South, right? So, like, redneck ass hillbilly traveling fairs, and they had a punch a shark exhibit and the shark was small enough, I think I'm in. Eight tickets, you know? $4.
Eight tickets. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
I think.
Punch a shark.
I think I'm in.
I would like a bunch of little sharks that would come up out of the hole like a whack-a-mole.
Yeah, and you could just, they're real.
But they're real. They're not
mole. And you have to hit them with your penis.
Where did that come from? I have no idea. That's a dream you had?
From sexual deviancy, I think.
I bet. All right. Yeah, so like I said, overall, this is a... It's meant to be fun. It's never meant to be taken seriously. But what I do love about it is there's not like a airplane type thing where they tell like a Leslie Nielsen joke right off the bat. Yeah. They let you slide into it. And there's some people that I've seen that like I've talked to this, you know, about this movie. And they go, yeah, it's really stupid. I'm like, you didn't get that it's supposed to be. And they don't. And it's fine. Now everybody has a great sense of humor like I do. And that's, you know, that's how it is.
Who told you that?
Everybody. Everybody.
That you have a good sense of humor.
Everybody does.
You're the funny one in your group, in your friend group.
Yeah, I am the funny one.
I'm the funny one in every group I'm in. I just walk into a new group and I just have a sense for like who the existing funniest person is.
Yeah.
And then I just kill him.
That's one way of doing it.
Well, and then guess who's now automatically the funniest fucking guy? Me.
I'm glad there's a distance between us then. So I'm just going to watch my mail for anything.
There's no way. There's no way you're the funniest guy in your group.
What do you mean?
I don't know. I don't know your friends. They may be very dull. And so by...
That's what I do, is I surround myself with very dull, unexciting, and uninteresting people.
Unattractive. Yeah. Like, hottest. I'm the most interesting. Exactly. I'm the fucking funniest.
Why would I hang around with people that are better than me?
I hang around with a bunch of poor, so I always feel exactly. Rich.
I'm always buying them drinks at the... I'm buying them stuff from the dollar store. They're so appreciative.
Oh, that's good. That's a good strategy. Here I am murdering folks, and you got it all.
I'm killing them with kindness.
That's right.
That's what
okay. Well, I can buy that.
All right. Well, I think it's time that we vote on these two films.
Okay.
And try to decide if there's a winner. So
there is.
Since it's my bracket, I will go first.
Okay.
And I'm honestly, this comes from the heart. I adore Deep Blue Sea. It's a guilty pleasure for me. It's one of my favorites. But Spin Out is the one that I will put on, especially like a music movie. There's lots of musicals out there, but this one I don't really have to pay too much attention to. So if I'm having some drinks and I feel like putting on a movie, I'll put on Spin Out, maybe Billy Joel live in concert, maybe Elvis, the 68 comeback special. That's another music one I love. But yeah, so I know who's going to win, but I'm going to vote for Spin Out. And then let's
what?
I'm going to vote for Spin Out. I'm staying true to my Elvis fandom. So
what?
I know you're not going to vote for Spin Out. It's fine. We can go to
no, there's no fucking way, dude. Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
Like you're trying to. What?
What am I trying to do? I'm not trying to do anything.
You fucking short-circuited my whole brain by voting for Spin Out over Deep Blue Sea.
I
have to.
I told you, I love the movie.
No one can make you do anything that your heart doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
Deep Blue Sea was fun. I just watched it, and like you said, and it didn't take long, and once I realized what I was getting into, I was in. Like people that yell at the screen in a movie theater, there I was. Watch out! Or whatever. It was really fun.
Yep.
And so my voot.
Your Canadian voot.
Yeah, my Canadian voot, sorry, is for Deep Blue Sea.
And that's perfectly fine. You know, so here's the thing is Deep Blue Sea, I laugh out loud. I watched it this past weekend and I still brought me the same joy that I did the first time I watched it. I laugh out loud at a lot of things. When LL Cool J is in the waist deep water and he's going, Bird. It cracks me up. Bird. It just drives me nuts. I just cracks me up. His prayers through the whole thing when he keeps doing the praying and when he drinks the sherry and then everything blows up. He realizes because he's supposed to be a preacher. That's his character name. He throws the bottle of wine down. It's really good. Yeah. So
that's why I voted for it.
And the audience vote, which I knew going in, was overwhelmingly Deep Blue Sea. I think Elvis was like maybe 20%. So I knew that my vote didn't really matter. unless you voted for Spin Out, it wasn't going to matter. So I honored Elvis. Rest in peace to the king.
I think we need to start having Mike be our intern to do one job for us, and that is to seal the envelope.
It's on our Facebook page.
I know, but man, you got to figure out some other fucking way to do it because you're just like giving your vote to shit.
This is the only time I've ever done that.
No, but if you didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay, what if
if I didn't
the audience
know.
Had chosen Spin Out? You knew that going in.
I would have been.
You'd have voted for Deep Blue Sea.
I would have been equally as happy to have Spin Out in the final four, just so you have to discuss Spin Out again. I would really love that. So, anyway, knowing that the audience did vote for Deep Blue Sea, that is our winner for this week. It is Deep Blue Sea, the final of the Guilty Pleasures first round movies. So, yeah, congratulations to Deep Blue Sea. So, we got to take a look at where the bracket stands right now. This is the final four films, and that will be our next show. Will be Tuesday, the 19th of August, where we will discuss all four of these one more time to get to a winner. It'll be Popstar versus Deep Blue Sea. That'll be interesting. Moulin Rouge versus Legally Blonde. And then those two will go head-to-head with each other for the championship in box office battle. So join us on Tuesday, the 19th of August, won't you, as we discuss the final four. We don't have to watch them again unless you really, really want to. So it's up to you, Eric.
You can watch whatever you want.
It is guilty pleasure, so why not, you know?
I might watch Popstar again. That movie was really fucking funny.
You know what? Yeah, between now and the final four, I recommend everybody watch all four of them, especially Spin Out as a bonus movie. You can do that.
But if you only have time for three, here's my recommendation. Popstar.
Yeah.
Moulin Rouge. Yeah. Legally Blonde.
Oh, okay. So just yours and then Popstar.
And one of yours.
One of mine, yeah.
So.
It'll be good.
No, I can't recommend somebody watch Spin Out over Legally Blonde or Moulin Rouge. Popstar.
I would not recommend anybody watch Spin Out or Roller Boogie on my side of the bracket that wasn't already familiar with what they're getting themselves into, because it's not a movie that really does age as well, unless you kind of like that stuff. Same with Roller Boogie. It's a dated film set in a different time. If you like a time capsule and you just want to look at, hey, this is what movies were like in the 70s and the 60s, then check them out. But yeah. So thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight on Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. We want to let you know, if you want to reach out to us and tell us what's on your mind and what do you want to do for our next category, then you can email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. Each and every week, we do the live stream on each and every other week, I should say. We do the live stream on Twitch at Box Office Battle Pod and on YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast. So join us for the live stream. We're happy that you come in to do that and leave a comment in the section. If you like the show, please make sure you subscribe on your podcast providers, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, so many others. Leave a comment. Smash and like the subscribe button, and we'll see you when we come around again on the 19th of August for the final four of Guilty Pleasures. With that, I'll turn it over to Eric for his final words of the night.
Until next time, you guys remember, be excellent to each other. We'll see you guys then.
See you, everybody. Thanks for another great night. 19th August, the final four of Guilty Pleasures. Be there.